there's meaning in the music there. We had planned to have Steve Buckley of The Athletic on with us yesterday, as you know, but nine walks, a hit batsman, 15 hits later. I believe the game just ended about 10 minutes ago, and so today we rectify the situation as Steve Buckley joins us. Buck, good afternoon.
You know, I had warned you about that yesterday, but you did not listen to me at all.
No, I did not. I was so hopeful that Theo Epstein's changes to the game would make even Corey Kluber an efficient pitcher.
Well, I mean, if there's a silver lining to it, if you didn't have those pace of game, speed up the game rules in place, yesterday's game would have dragged on for 4.5 hours. So there's at least that.
Absolutely.
And we're glad that they had them, because in addition to the fact that, and I'm sure if you saw the game, you would have noticed this, your listeners, that as tedious as the game was as an entertainment buy, it was also as about cold as I can remember it for opening day. It was really, really nippy out there. And I made my, you know, obligatory trips down to the stands to glad hand and say hi to old friends, as happens for a lot of us who've been going to Fenway for years. And it was tough being down there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it wasn't that easy watching at home either, but for other reasons than the cold. So is it a glass half full or glass half empty situation? Yes, a lot of problems with the pitching. They came up short, and yet the team came from 6 runs down and had a chance to win it in the ninth inning.
Well, I'm going to go with glass half empty because we are evaluating the Red Sox. There are two different things affecting the Red Sox in terms of where they want to be this year. Obviously, number one is the standings. They want to win games and climb in the standings and compete for a playoff spot. That's the obvious one. But from a marketing and cash draw standpoint, they've got to look at this from the perspective of the Red Sox, Patriots, Bruins, and Celtics have all had great seasons over the years. Well, it so happens that the Bruins and Celtics are having another one of their great seasons right now. They both had big wins last night. The Celtics mauled Milwaukee. The Bruins clinched the President's Cup. And there's the possibility both teams go deep into the postseason, as in June. Well, if the Red Sox get off to a bad start, and they're not going to be the focal point of all our attention for the next few months, but if when the Bruins or Celtics are done and the Red Sox are languishing, people are just going to ignore them and go right to Patriots training camp. That's a problem.
Yeah, and as you pointed out in The Athletic, one game is okay. It's opening day, and they've had success. Was it 3 of the last 4 world championships began with an opening day loss? But the month of April is pretty crucial.
It is crucial because it's, you know, every manager in baseball has said it. A W is as much a W in April as it is in September, and there's no arguing that math. But the wins you get in April set a tone for what people plan on doing with their summer months. And listen, we all agree, Fenway is a wonderful place to be in the summer. I happen to have been a kid when the Red Sox were lousy every year, and as a child, it never occurred to me that they might be good one day. I just loved being at Fenway. And there is still a lot of people who just want to be there, you know, with that beer deck out in right field and all the music, the street scene, Louis Tiant's, Cuban sandwiches. It's a great place to be, and yet more people will still go when the team wins games. That math does not change.
So for any number of reasons, birthday, too much pressure, whatever, Chris Sale did not get the opening day start, but I wonder now, is there even more pressure on him to perform well tomorrow?
Well, there is, because there will be more of what we're talking about if he has a lousy game. And I still don't understand the reasoning behind that, because pressure isn't something that's ever been an issue with Chris Sale. I mean, he nailed down the Dodgers in the ninth inning of Game 5. Granted, it was only Game 5, and had he not nailed it down, there would have been 2 more games to settle the issue, as it were. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just old-fashioned. The general rule of thumb is you get your ace out there on the mound in that shiny uniform on opening day. That's what, you know, from Jim Lonborg to Clemens to Pedro to Schilling to Beckett, right on down the road. You want to see your guy on the mound on opening day to get things off to a shiny start.
Absolutely, yeah. I was very surprised that he wouldn't want to be out there in that situation. So will this team go as far in either direction as their pitching takes them?
Yes, and I think that you can pick two or three players that the entire season is sort of hinging on. And when you look at pitching, I would say Sale is at the top of that, given the amount of money they gave him in the spring of 2019. It's been a bad deal across the board because he's been hurt for almost all of it. And at some point, they want to get some return on their investment. We know that he's a great pitcher. We've seen him do great things. We've seen him with lots of strikeouts and a great slider. And I also give him credit for, he's also a really good baseball player. I remember him getting a couple of hits. He always backed up bases. He had a hustle double once. He's an exciting player when he's healthy. His health is so important to this team this year, perhaps more so than ever before.
I absolutely, as someone who loves old baseball names and baseball history, love the fact that you made reference to the great Rabbit Wurstler in your piece in The Athletic. 11 years, never hit above 250. It's a name for the ages.
Well, you know, it's funny because Verdugo led off the bottom of the first with a triple, and they announced that it was the first time that the first batter of a season for the Red Sox had begun the season with a triple since Rabbit Wurstler in 1931. And I said, oh, that's nice. But the next 2 hours, I kept thinking, I wrote his name down recently. Why was I looking him up? And so I finally, well, let me just go through my archives. And for The Athletic, during the pandemic, when there were no games being played, I did this kind of goofy story on Red Sox uniform history, who's the best player to wear which uniform and so forth. And within the confines of that piece, I mentioned that the first player ever to appear in a game wearing a uniform was Rabbit Wurstler, opening day 1931. That was the first year they wore uniforms because he was the leadoff hitter on the road. He's the first Red Sox player to be in a game with a uniform number. And as it happened, it was that game. He led off that game with a triple at Yankee Stadium. And that's how I sort of stumbled on this little nugget yesterday.
I love that. We're talking with Steve Buckley here on Downtown. A friend sent me a link to a video that showed up on YouTube recently, a Red Sox game from 1970, from April, I think, on the old on WHDH back in the day. And the first guy I saw on the mound for the Red Sox was Portland, Maine's Ed Phillips.
Oh, wow. Well, what game is that? I'd love to see. Is that on YouTube?
It's on YouTube. It's just a random game from April of 1970, but Ed Phillips was on the mound. And what was interesting was he was wearing number 27, which got us digging around, realizing that Fisk didn't have 27 when he first started, that he was actually number 40 for a while.
Number 40, yeah. Well, he actually came up in like 66 or 68 or 69 or maybe 69. I think 69 was his first cup of coffee, as they to use the lingo. And then I don't think he was up at all in 70. I'm doing this off the top of my head, I swear. Then he got a few at bats in 71, and of course 72 he finally stuck his rookie of the year. But yeah, I mean, it's not uncommon for players to sort of wear a goofy uniform number. And then as they sort of gain some experience and numbers open up, I always tell the story about Manny Del Carmen, who's from Boston, had some like 57, 59 or something. But his uniform number all through high school was 17. And at the end of that season, Dave Wallace, the pitching coach, retired. And that was his number. And he was on the phone 2 seconds later to Tommy McLaughlin, the clubhouse guy. He said, please, can I have number 17? So that's how those things happen sometimes. I love those goofy little stories like that.
I was watching a video somebody posted for opening day, and it was really wonderful and poignant to see a lot of the names. And it was a in memoriam, all the former players that we've lost since opening day of last year. And there were some Red Sox names, of course, but one that stuck out to me because he was such an interesting story when I was a younger Red Sox fan, and that was Win Remmerswal.
Yeah, he was from, what, the Netherlands?
Right.
Yeah, and... And I think I know a lot about him through Peter Gammons. Peter when covered the Red Sox for the Globe when I was in high school and before and after. And Peter had a way of sort of latching on to certain players. And I think that Peter probably wrote more about Win Rimmerswall than he probably deserves. I think he liked the name. He liked him. He was kind of a character. And he's definitely one of those names from the past that if you're a fan of a certain age, takes you back to that time. And I was watching that moment yesterday when all those names were coming across on the screen. And one of them, if I had known about it, I forgot, and I apologize. But Gary Peters, I didn't know that he had passed away.
I didn't either.
And he was a lefty on the Red Sox and a very good hitting pitcher. There was a year there in 71, I think, that Eddie Casco used him as a pinch hitter like 30 times, and he delivered. He was a very good hitting pitcher and won 16, 17 games a few times. And this wouldn't be on his baseball card, but he was one of Yaz's best friends. They were, during his time with the Red Sox, they were always going off. I mean, I know this anecdotally. I wasn't covering the team back then, but they were always going off fishing and stuff. But he's one of those names from the past that for some reason I hadn't noticed his passing and took note of it yesterday.
Now, here's a name from the past. Now, I mention this to people every once in a while, and nobody seems to remember him, but I bet you will. And I believe he got hit by a pitch in his first at-bat in the major leagues, Carmen Fanzone.
I actually communicated with him.
Wow.
A number of years back. Well, there was a there was sort of an urban legend that he was in the Tonight Show band.
Wow.
On Johnny Carson. he was, in point of fact, a trumpet player. He was a professional trumpet player, and he did do some work for NBC when his career ended. But I'm pretty sure he was not, and I actually have a note from him in my files at home. I keep this file. When I get letters from people that are kind of well-known, they're not necessarily autographs, but, like, look, I got a letter from Carmen Fanzone, and you don't want to throw it out, so I have a little file. I think it literally is called Letters from Famous People. And I don't know if he'd qualify as famous, but you know, let me put it to you this way. If you get a letter from Comic Fan Zone, you don't throw it out, correct?
Absolutely. I would keep that as you have right to this very day. You know it.
When I'm out shopping now, when I get home, I will DM you a photo of that because I know where it is in my house.
Oh, that's fantastic. So I knew you would be able to come through, as always. Steve Buckley of The Athletic, great to talk with you, as always, Buck. Thank you much. Have a great weekend, and we'll catch you again soon.
Same to you. I'll see you during the next 3-hour and 20-minute game that shouldn't be.
You got it. Thanks, Buck.
Bye.
Steve Buckley with us on Downtown.